Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. It is a Tuesday, and OSU is no longer undefeated. Joining me is Kyle Porter. Kyle, they went out in flames. If you're going to lose like that, right? You got torched.
Well, the first drive. Yeah. I joked about this on the blog, but the commercials after the first drive lasted longer than the first drive for Baylor. And it's just... It's crazy to me that with how much film there is of Baylor and what they do, that's what they do on every first drive. They throw it to one of their dudes and run them deep, and it's like, have you not watched this? Like, did you not know that was what was going to happen? And I'm willing to consider this. Maybe Baylor's just so talented and so good and so fast that it's just. It's almost impossible to stop until you get into the flow of the game. But that was a bad omen for the night, just how quickly and how easily they scored on that first drive.
Yeah, OU figured it out. They really slowed down Baylor, which makes their win even more impressive after seeing what Baylor did to OSU. Yeah. I was on top of the stadium doing TV still. We had an hour-long pregame show for the OU game. But we were in a commercial break during that first drive, so I was able to kind of turn around and watch. And just to see how bad OSU was burnt deep early with Katie Cannon and that double move. And just, it's so funny too, when you're in the stadium, you can hear like as Cannon beats the guy and has like 10 steps on him, you can just hear the crowd going, oh no, like all at once. And that, you're right, that was a sign of things to come. And that to me was the most disappointing part of it, is that that's what Baylor's offense isn't really that complicated. They're going to try and run the ball and they're going to throw it deep. And they basically did that at will all night. Now, I will say this. As disappointing as the defense was early, they weathered the storm. They tied it up. And I thought the defense did their part as far as forcing three turnovers to kind of get themselves back in the game. And I thought the offense just completely hung the defense out to dry. I would put the loss even more so on the offense than I would the defense because they couldn't stay on the field. They couldn't get a first down. They couldn't block. And they really hung out the defense to dry, and all those plays they had, they faced 104 plays. And so when they're getting beat deep in the second half, it's a little more understandable since they've been on the field the whole game. I was really disappointed in the offense.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this, but I try to not read the comment section on the blog, and every once in a while I'll visit it.
Peruse it.
And I wrote that I thought the defense played pretty well considering that it was Baylor. And our friend Nate just lost his mind and said that, you know, Spencer and his defense are, I don't know if he used these words, but he basically said they're a fraud. You know, they've been terrible the last few games. And what do you want them to do against Baylor? Baylor put up 50 on Alabama. I mean, that's how good their offense is. And Oklahoma State held them to 45, I believe it was on 14 possessions. So I ran the number. It was like 3.21 points per possession, which is almost a full point below their season average. And they've almost played all their games. I mean, they played 10 games now. And to do that and create three turnovers, Oklahoma State, when creating three turnovers and not turning it over at all, since 2000, they're 15-0. What do you want from the defense? They set the table for you. If you can't score more than 45 against Baylor at home, you're not going to win. I mean, you're just not.
Yeah, and the quick strikes early really opened up the running game too.
Yeah.
And but if you look back on it, yeah, they ran the ball for 300 yards. They ran it, but they ran it 74 times. That averages out to about 4 yards a carry, 4.1.
Yeah.
And so they weren't just getting gashed in the running game. They obviously, you give up 700 yards and like that, the defense didn't play well. We both can admit that. But they didn't have a chance to play well once they're on the field for the entire first half. Like after that, it's just all bets are off. You got Katie Cannon running wide open, and it just got ugly. But I place more blame on the offense. I really do. Yes, the defense has not played well the last 2 or 3 weeks, but I thought they did enough in that first half to keep it close enough for the offense to really make a comeback, and they just weren't able to.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I was thinking about this. Like, I'm not totally sure what went wrong on offense other than Baylor's defensive line was unbelievable and kind of exposed Oklahoma State's offensive line, which has really just kind of been holding it together all year. And I really felt like this game, more than being disappointed in it, it kind of pointed back at the 12-game winning streak and made it that much more impressive because you saw the talent differential. And maybe that's an excuse, and maybe I'm trying to justify the fact that Oklahoma State got thumped at home with the national title on the line. But Baylor just has more talent. I was talking to an OU friend that I have, one of my good buddies down here, and I was like, Baylor might have more talent than OU. Like, their dudes are just unbelievable. And we texted about this. You called Katie Cannon, would you call him a thoroughbred?
A stallion. Baylor has horses, man.
Yeah.
They have pros all over the field, and that's why they've won the Big 12 twice. That's why they might win it a third time. They have pros all over the field, and that, to me, is one of the biggest issues OSU has going forward. Yes, Mike Gundy's done an incredible job to get them where they are, but they don't have enough pros right now. And Mike Gundy's been incredible at making three-star guys incredible college players. That's pretty... Oh, my dog's yawning. Sorry about that. He's done an incredible job not recruiting stallions, not recruiting horses, and you can win the Big 12 just by hitting on the guys that you want and make them fit your system, which Gundy's done an incredible job at. We would all agree about that. But if you're going to want to make the Final Four, and if you're going to want to go undefeated, you have to have more pros, specifically along the offensive line and defensive lines, and that's what Baylor has. And I was able to meet up with our friend of the pod, Adam Lunt, before the game. You know, he and I are both big Florida State fans, and we were talking. 22 out of 22 Florida State starters on their 2013 national title team are playing in the NFL or will play in the NFL. 20 of them are in the NFL right now. The other two will be drafted this year.
Yeah.
That's what you're dealing with if you want to compete at the national level in the playoff. And OSU just does not have the NFL caliber talent. Now, I'm not saying they can't win the Big 12. They might win it this Saturday if things fall right. It's just when you want to go undefeated, it's super hard, and you have to just out-talent people. And Baylor had way more talent than
them. I think to your point, it just makes it easier. And that's what's happened all year. I mean, I think we can all agree if this season was played 1,000 times, Oklahoma State would probably most often be, I don't know, 8-2 or I guess 8-3 now, or 9-2 or something like that. It didn't have the feel or the look of an 11-0 team. And again, it speaks to how good Gundy and Yurcich and Glenn Spencer have been, but. If you look back at, even the 2011 team, NFL dudes, not all over the field, but for Oklahoma State, they were all, for Oklahoma State standards, they were all over the field. You know, Gilbert, Whedon, Randall, Blackman, all these guys that are NFL dudes, and even, you know, guys like Lane Taylor and guys like that who play on the line who end up playing in the NFL, like you mentioned. I don't know if Oklahoma State has an offensive lineman on the roster who will play in the NFL right now.
I don't know. Maybe one of the young guys that's not playing yet, but you'd think he'd be on the field already if he was.
Yeah.
But I liked what you said in some of your 10 thoughts. I think it was you or maybe Boone, that what Baylor did to OSU, specifically in the second half, is what that 2011 team would do with Joseph Randall and Jeremy Smith. They get a lead, and they would just pound you for the whole second half. And that's basically what they did. And that game, as I was thinking it at the time, and that comment kind of made me think of it, that game reminded me a lot of the Bedlam game in 2011, where receivers were just wide open. I mean, all the way down the field. They were burning OU all game, that 2011 Bedlam game. And then they just pounded Jeremy Smith. That's the only game that Brandon Wheaton didn't have a touchdown pass that year. So it reminded me a lot of, and that 2011 team did have a lot of pros. So there's a lot of parallels there, but Art Briles is legit, man. If you're LSU, aren't you calling Art Briles? Like, I know he's probably not going to leave. He just built a stadium in Waco, and he's pretty set in his ways there. But could you imagine the stallions and horses he would get at LSU?
Just a whole stable of them.
Oh, my gosh.
By the way, what is LSU doing? Where are we at in society, to quote Mike Gundy?
What do you mean?
Did you say LSU? Oh,
yeah, LSU. I thought you said OSU.
No, I said, what is LSU? Les Miles has a better winning percentage at LSU than Nick Saban did. What are we doing?
I know. They think they're Bama, and they haven't won the league in 3 or 4 years, so they want to fire the coach.
I mean...
Saban lost 16 games in 5 years there.
This reminds me of the OU fans who want to fire Stoops every year. It's like, what are you doing? Like, who... What do you think you're going to accomplish by firing Bob Stoops?
Well, someone said on Twitter recently, like, what Saban has done in the SEC has just made it completely unfair for every other coach. Because now, like, he wins the SEC practically every year, wins a title every other year. So what he's done is just heightened these crazy expectations for everyone else. I mean, Auburn might fire Malzahn in a year. And he just won a national championship. Yeah. Auburn's fired their last three coaches who have won national championships.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's
and they fired Tuberville, who went undefeated and won the SEC, but missed out because OU got in over them. So the SEC's nuts. They're crazy. And the SEC's kind of down right now. I think that might be why LSU's frustrated more than anything. They're down, and Alabama's still on top. So I don't know what they're doing. Where would you want to see Les coach? Would he be great at, like, USC?
Somebody, friend of the pod, Ty Ames, who's done some wrestling stuff for PFB, I think he was the one that tweeted this. He said, Les Miles in LA at SC, how good would that be? Like, just the spotlight all the time. Like, he tries to own LA. Like, he's you know, eating the turf at the Rose Bowl and
riding the horse with the sword. What about this? Does LSU call Oklahoma State's coach for a second straight time?
No, I mean,
call?
It's so, like, this time of year, like, everybody, and this annoys me. I mean, it doesn't annoy me because I understand why people do it. I do it for different reasons, but people just make these lists of you know, coaches who would be good for certain positions, and it's like there's no like validity to it. There's no depth to it. It's just names on a piece of paper that people like to look at, and for some reason, it gets a ton of traffic from people online. It's like, well, of course, Mike Gundy would be a good coach at LSU, but think about, like, realistically everything that has to happen for that to take place. It's just, I don't know. It's dumb.
I just thought the parallels were kind of funny.
Yeah.
It could be like, because Southern Miss hired two straight OSU offensive coordinators. They hired Fedora, then Munkin.
Yeah, they did. I feel like everybody in the SEC should just trade coaches for a year. Like, like Rick should go to Auburn, and Malzahn should go to LSU, and Miles should go to Georgia, and Spurrier should have gone to Kentucky. I mean, just trade them. just mix them all up. See what happens.
That would be interesting. Less at, like, Ole Miss or Mississippi State would be hilarious.
Yeah,
less anywhere would be funny. Yeah. You mentioned you don't read the comments section. Someone tweeted last night that Twitter is basically a live comments section. Why do we do this to ourselves? Which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's a good point. But if you follow, like, the comments section can be really good if you read the right comments. I've taken comments and turned them into either posts or longer articles or projects or whatever. Like, there's some really smart comments from different readers. And so I feel like if you're following the smart, good people on Twitter that,
yeah, I would amend that to the mentions section is, yes, like the comment section on Twitter.
Yes, absolutely.
Did I tell you that I enraged the state of Iowa?
We both did.
Dude.
I had Iowa fans just saying just F you after Oklahoma State got beat by Baylor.
Oh, they didn't wait that long. They waited till they beat Purdue to, like, curse me, my dog, like, everything. Like, it's amazing to me the vitriol that people are willing to put out there on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, these people, I assume, maybe they don't, I assume they have jobs. And if their boss were to see what they were writing on Twitter, they would be fired the next day. And it's just amazing to me that people just drop F you, F this, you're a F and whatever. And it's amazing to me. And it really kind of enhances just what the players and coaches have to deal with. Like,
yeah,
can you imagine what their Twitter feed looks like after a game? That would be just insane. I'm just a guy bagging on the Big Ten. You know, I'm not the guy who dropped the game winning touchdown pass or whatever, you know. It was kind of startling, honestly, to see. Just to see what kind of filth people would put in there. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, and it's odd. Like,
I don't like your team. Like, does that really warrant a F you?
Well, and I don't understand, like, the I guess I don't understand the psychology behind, like, typing those words into my phone and sending them to someone. Like, like, just the, like, pure, like, just F you hatred. It's like, what? I don't know. Like, what do you get out of it? Like, is there like some sort of self-satisfaction there?
I think so. They felt really great about it, I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of poor offenses, I want to talk about Oklahoma State's a little bit. What? Because to me, it looked like during the game that Oklahoma State was trying to bounce Carson outside and then throw it deep with Rudolph, and that was pretty much it. Like, those were the two plays, and it didn't. You know, was that lack of a seemingly a plan, was that a result of Baylor's just overwhelming talent on defense, or did OSU just crap the bed on Saturday?
It seemed to me, and I don't know enough about schemes and breakdowns or whatever, but it just seemed to me like they panicked a little bit. You know, they hit a few deep shots with Washington, and they felt obviously that was their best and maybe only route to scoring, so they just kept playing a game of 5,000, just launching it. I thought they really should have gotten Glidden more involved underneath.
Yeah.
I know they didn't have the two tight ends, but they had Veach in the middle there. I would have liked to see in the middle of the field more, because Baylor obviously was saying, you're not going to beat us deep, and we're not going to let you run the ball. So I think the offense just didn't look like what it had looked like the past, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. There wasn't enough underneath stuff. And once you get down, you know, it really tests your resolve on what you want to do. And I think they kind of panicked a little bit on offense.
Yeah, and I think with anything, it's always a combination of stuff, right? Like, I think that Baylor sort of surprised them with what they did a little bit, maybe. And then Mike Yurcich has been hitting a lot of the right buttons of late, and I feel like he didn't on Saturday, and I feel like that was pretty apparent.
Well, and the biggest problem to me was they kept running on first down and putting themselves in second and long. Once you do that against a Baylor team that has talent like they do,
yeah,
you're in trouble. Like, they were behind the chains all night, and that's why they didn't get very many first downs, because they've been money on third down all year, because most of the time they've been manageable, and they were not in very manageable situations. So it was just a giant avalanche. Like, everything went wrong from the start, and it just continued to go wrong.
I will say that the touchdown to President Washington is Gus. Did you ever hear the call by Gus?
I did after the fact. Like, I just called him that on Twitter, President Washington. And I heard Gus did too.
Yeah, he lost it. I mean, like right when that happened, I was pulling a vine of it to put on Twitter. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it through this game, because it felt like they were just going to trade touchdowns for the next 5 hours. And then Baylor scored 24 straight after that, and it was pretty much over. But
how in the world was it a 10-point game with like 5 minutes left? Like, how did that happen? Like, I kind of like sleptwalked through the second half. I was kind of doing other things, for getting ready for TV. And then I look up like, wait a second, if they score here, it'll be a 10-point game. And then they do.
Yeah.
I'm just like, how did we get here? They've been dominated all night.
Yeah, I don't know. They kind of just – the turnovers is one thing, and the defense just sort of hung in there. Like, again, they gave up 45, but they were sort of hanging around. But it would have taken a miracle at the end for them to pull that off.
Have we talked about how Baylor has Cam Newton as their third-string quarterback?
Well, I was getting ready to ask you what your opinion was on – this whole second string, third string quarterback thing, because I feel like Oklahoma State's sort of getting like scoffed at. You couldn't even beat Baylor's third string quarterback. And it's like, well, Baylor's third string quarterback, it turns out, is pretty good and would probably start at Texas. So
he's probably going to beat TCU.
Yeah.
Well, I had leading up that week, I mean, I had texted about Stidham's status. And I was like, well, they don't really have a backup. They have a guy that like played receiver. And then I remember looking at it on like Wednesday just to see who he was, and I was like, oh man, he's 6'5", 225. That's a big old boy, but he must not be able to throw. Well, then he gets in there, and his first play drops just a seed, a dime, and the Baylor guy, I think OSU guy, made an incredible play.
It was Trey Flowers.
Yeah, he made that incredible recovery. That's the other thing. Like, Baylor could have had 1,000 yards. Like, they had two or three bombs that OSU barely made them fall incomplete, like made great plays just to stop them, but I was like, oh boy, that guy's good.
Yeah.
He could run, and he could throw, and he beat him deep. And I was like, Art Briles just knows what he's doing at quarterback, man. Going back to his Houston days, Kevin Cobb, pro. Case Keenum, pro. Robert Griffin, pro. You know, he knows what he's doing at quarterback. And even his third stringers are apparently really good.
Yeah. I was with you. Whenever they trotted him out there, first of all, I thought Stidham was really good. Like, that dude...
He was locked in.
Yeah, he can... He can throw it. Like, he's... I'm concerned about the next 3 years, or I guess maybe 2 years of him playing quarterback there, because with the system they have and with his talent, that's scary. But when they rolled Johnson out there, I thought, well, you know, he's going to scramble. He's probably going to run for 150 yards in the second half. But if they can keep him from throwing it a little, and then, like, the like second play call was this like 50-yard deep ball that was just on the money, and I was like, "Oh boy, we're in for a long half here," because,
like, yeah, Cam Newton coming off the bench.
Yeah, it was impressive, and they cut to a shot of I can't remember his first name, but Bryles is Kendall Bryles.
Yeah,
their offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, he was just locked in, like, calling plays. I was like, they're not even worried. Like, they're not even changing anything. Like, this is not going to go well. He did throw one really bad pass, though, the interception.
Yeah, that was more of like an inexperienced pick. He just threw it when he should have just threw it away.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about Rudolph. Did you have any Rudolph thoughts on Saturday?
Yeah, like, and I'm sure you'll probably touch on the same thing. The guy can throw for like 460, and people just like don't even like bat an eye. Like, I think he's dealing a lot with what some of the OU quarterbacks had to deal with after Bradford. Like, he's coming after Brandon Weeden, and it's just, you almost can't win. Like, no matter what you do, he might be as good as Brandon Weeden. The deep balls he throws are incredible. And people forget, Weeden threw 13 picks 2 years in a row. Like, he wasn't prone to, like, he made mistakes, too. He wasn't infallible. So I feel like he's graded on a curve, Mason Rudolph is. And I think he's a really good quarterback. And imagine if he had a running game that Brandon Weeden had at his disposal. I think he's every bit as good as OSU's ever had at quarterback. And it's kind of a shame that he has the two quarterback system thing going on, and the fact he didn't have a running game. That's kind of what I feel about him.
You stole all my points.
Oh, sorry. I thought you might touch the same points, but, I mean, isn't it? Well, you think he's kind of dealing with that, just kind of the shadow of Weeden?
Yeah, it's super frustrating to me, and I don't know why it's frustrating. I don't know why I care about this. I shouldn't. But Mason Rudolph is a really, really good college quarterback. He might even be a pro quarterback at some point. And people are like, well, we're not running well. Let's get Walsh out there. It's like... That is no, like, are you watching this? Like, and that's not to say, you know, he still has throws that he misses, and I don't want to make him throwing for 430 and three touchdowns in a game. Like, I don't want to point to that and say this is why he's good, because anybody OSU puts back, I mean, Walsh threw for a lot of yards whenever he was the quarterback. That's not the point. The point is that he can do things that other quarterbacks can't do. He's gotten really smart with the football. He talked earlier this year about how he wanted to cut down on his mistakes and stop throwing interceptions. Guess what? He hasn't thrown an interception since the West Virginia game, maybe?
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, he's gone like four games, I think, without an interception. And I don't know. I find it ludicrous for people to say, well, maybe we should put Walsh out there. Mason Rudolph is, I mean, he's really, I think I mentioned this, or I have a note to write about it, he's getting the Landry Jones treatment that Landry got at OU. Landry wasn't, he didn't win a Heisman, but he was a really good college quarterback. Same thing with Mason Rudolph. He's not Brandon Weeden, but he's a sophomore, and he's already got, you know, he's already set a ton of records. He's got the third best yardage season in terms of quarterbacks in school history. The only player that's thrown for more than him was Weeden. And I think the majority of OSU fans understand that and get it, but there's just loud minority that just don't seem to get it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure you're on the same page as me, and all that makes sense to me. I had a Landry Jones thought too when I was talking about Weeden. I'm tired of seeing Walsh when they're not in the red zone. I don't know about you. I don't want to see it anymore, especially when Rudolph has NBA Jam flames coming off his arm. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I can understand why he'd be pissed off about it too. I mean, that's just silly.
Yeah.
But the last three games, he had a pick at Tech. That's the last pick he had. Okay. But the last three games, he's thrown 110 passes and doesn't have a pick.
Yeah.
And
he's thrown
5, 6. Yep, 9 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So he's as good as they've ever had a quarterback, and he's only a sophomore. He'll have 2 more years.
It is weird to think. Yes, he's only a sophomore, but he's two or three games. From being a junior.
How do you feel about, because I thought about this when you posted your article about Walsh petitioning for a 6-year. Part of me was kind of like, why don't you just trade the helmet in for a hat? Like, I don't know if I want to do the two quarterback dance has helped them a lot with the running game.
Yeah.
I
know what you're saying.
I like Rudolph enough in that way to where, like, I don't know. Obviously, you'd like to have Walsh back for a 6-year. He's been great. He won the game in Lubbock. It's really helped their lack of a running game. But was part of you at all just kind of like,
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is a small part. I think, like, if I look at it big picture overall, I think it'd be good to have him back.
Yeah,
but there's definitely a small part of me that's like,
just hand the keys.
You know, take away 20 more touchdowns from Rudolph's Heisman campaign next year, you know? but
Walsh needs to, like, pass Rudolph in the hallway and just toss him a set of keys. And be like, it's yours now.
Yeah, seriously.
As he exits from Pickens Stadium.
Yeah. Well, as he heads to the
coach's room.
Yeah, the coach. He just starts drawing up plays. He's gonna be like, Walsh is going to be, like, in the coach's room the day after the Alamo Bowl this year. Like, he
might already be in there. He might already be in training with Yursich and Gundy.
Okay, I did want to talk a little bit about, by the way, did you like the uniforms?
They're awesome. Yeah. Like, I'm on like autopilot now with the uniforms. I nod in approval and move on. Like, I don't have many thoughts about them. They were awesome. They were as good as they were. You know, they look great in the Cactus Bowl too.
Yeah.
Overall, it is kind of crazy how little we've seen of the brand on the helmet. We haven't seen that hardly at all this year.
Uh-uh.
It's been mostly Pistol Pete.
Yeah, or the throwback.
Yeah, we haven't really seen it much at all. Maybe once, twice.
What do you want to see for Bedlam?
Well, that's a good question. Well, you know me, man. I still want to see black, gray, black. We still haven't seen it. I want to see it, but it's Bedlam. You almost have to wear orange, so I'm sure they'll go black, orange, black. Traditional Bedlam look.
Yeah. I would like to see the helmet they wore for the Kansas game, the throwback with the diagonal OSU.
Uh-huh.
And then either orange tops and black pants or the other way around. I don't care. I just, you know me.
Oh, yeah.
And the tricolors. I just...
That'd make you weak.
It would. I love that helmet, too. I think it's...
Yeah, I said it in the uniform prediction deal. They've been outstanding this year. I have no complaints.
Yeah,
I've complained a lot over the last 4 or 5 years, but they've been awesome. They've been great combinations, and they've done just great work with the helmets. The helmets have a new helmet every game practically. So
yeah.
it's been a joy to watch, and you knew almost every week you were getting something new, which is what I've always been wanting. So
yeah.
They've been awesome. Did you say you wanted to talk about the Big Ten?
Oh boy, I want to talk about the Big Ten.
You know that. You know I can talk about the Big Ten.
I watched a lot of Big Ten on Saturday.
Did you hate watch the Iowa game like I did? Iowa Purdue.
Well, I thought you had a great tweet, and I semi swiped part of it for a tweet that I had. You said Iowa. This was so good. Iowa is struggling with Purdue's spread offense. Other things Iowa struggles with: texting. Updating the iPhone and Facebook, because Iowa has just now entered the 21st century. You know, I just watched their game and I'm like, what am I watching? Like, you know,
Purdue's 2-8 and they look like they were cutting edge.
Yeah. I feel like Nick Saban, like, is this what we want football to be? Like, it's just trash.
A lot of Iowans, by the way, thought I was like trashing their state with that statement, with that tweet. I was like, you didn't even get the tweet. Like, it's their football is in the dark ages, not your state. They tried to like bag on Oklahoma and how we ride horses or something. And I was like, dude, you didn't even get the point here. But
yeah,
whatever.
That's not the point. The real game that I wanted to talk about, though, was Ohio State-Michigan State. What was I watching?
I wasn't able to watch most of it, but you just look at the numbers. It hurts my eyes.
It was so bad. Like, it wasn't. I mean, those are allegedly two top 10 teams last week and this week, and it was garbage. I mean,
yeah, and don't give me weather. Like, OU and Baylor played in like freezing cold rain, and they put up 40 and 35.
Maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel like any of the four Big 12 teams that are at the top would have, I don't know about smoked, but they would have beaten either of those teams on that night pretty handily.
I agree, and it just goes back to everything I've said about the Big Ten. Like, they don't have offenses. Like, they just kind of slob it around, and like that helps their defensive stats, but it's not even the same sport almost when you watch a Baylor offense and then you switch over to Michigan State and Ohio State. Like, that's two different sports, and like the defenses are having to play two different sports basically from league to league. And I just hope, I'm not sure how many bowls are affiliated with Big 12, Big 10, or how many matchups we'll get, but I really hope it's like four or five just to see the carnage.
Well, it's interesting because looking back at the Cotton Bowl last year when Baylor blew that lead to Michigan State, so we've got that recent history, but I guess my point is that the two teams that played last Saturday afternoon in Columbus, on that day, they wouldn't have beaten OU, Oklahoma State, Baylor, or TCU. Like, they were just bad. Ohio State was just awful. They had, at one point, I think it was in the fourth quarter, they had more three and outs than they had first downs. They're scoring, the only way they score is on defensive turnovers, like inside the red zone. Like,
yeah,
like,
that muff punt, yeah.
Yeah, like their defense almost has to score for them to punch it in against Michigan State, and it's just, it was bad. You know, I'd watched a little Big Ten, but I hadn't watched a long, like a full game like that pretty much all year. And it was just, it was terrible. I love the Michigan State field goal kicker celebration. How good was that?
Oh, the windmill?
That was good.
That was spectacular. Like the meme potential on that, you know, mom made pizza rolls or something, you know, spectacular. Did you read, Matt Hayes wrote a great article after the Baylor game on just the Big 12's PR problem. Did you read that at all?
No.
Well, he
was it
he
basically, Sports on Earth?
Sports, Sporting News.
Sporting News, okay.
He basically says, like, just because the Big 12 scores a lot of points doesn't mean it's not ready for the playoff. And he basically talked about did you see the terrible Notre Dame game against Boston College, by the way?
I saw, like, it was like 19-16 or something stupid.
But his overall point was, like, in an age of football where quarterback play is everything, like, the Big 12 does it better than anyone, yet they're somehow penalized for that. He's like, you don't think these leagues that had to have to face these NFL quarterbacks wouldn't be getting scored on too? I mean, Ohio State runs 45 plays in their entire game. Baylor hit 50 midway through the second quarter.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know. It was a really good article. I encourage everyone to read it. I tweeted out a link to it, too. Just the PR problem the Big 12 has is everything. It's just, by any measure, it's the second best conference in America. And that's where for all the Iowa bashing I've done, it's more of Big 10. And I've said that for a while now. It's just, I don't understand why anyone thinks the Big Ten's any good. Like, yeah, there are two marquee teams, Ohio State and Michigan State. I guess you throw Michigan in there as well. They get housed by OU or Baylor. I think they get destroyed. So it's frustrating to me that our intelligence is being insulted the way it is with the Big Ten. And, yeah, and the fact that people don't think the Big 12's any good. The Big 12's being treated like the fifth best conference in America, and it drives me nuts. And
How upset are you going to be if a two-loss Stanford team gets in the playoff over the Big 12 champ, which has one loss?
Just disband the conference if that happens. Like, you made a great point. Like, just, you're like, why does the Big 12 exist if that happens?
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
And we saw a little bit, too, on Saturday, just with all, like, the TCU-OU game taking a beating, the two quarterbacks hurting that game, Baylor on its third string. It kind of goes back to that theory I had about the SEC playing cupcakes in November. Like, Big 12's just beat themselves up. I would like to see some more marquee games early in the season like the SEC does. Then the committee can't say, well, we'll wait. We'll wait till you play somebody. The SEC has it perfect. They have their big games early. They get all the attention, all the game days, and they laud all these teams early to where, okay, these are the best teams. And then they get to kind of get healthy for their last rivalry game of the year. I think the Big 12 needs to examine how they schedule as well.
Well, and here's another point. My one of my friends from high school, kind of a mentor of mine in high school, he went to Baylor, a big Baylor fan. And we were emailing about how, or he emailed me, I should say, this great thing about how, like, the preseason perception doesn't sound like it means a lot, but when you have 8 SEC teams ranked in the top 25, you're gonna move up if you beat one of those just because they're ranked in the top 25. Does that make sense?
And if you
lose to one, you're not gonna drop as much. So it's almost like you almost self-perpetuate within your conference when you beat and lose team, you know, to different teams. And so we act like the preseason perception doesn't matter, and the week 11 college football playoff standings don't matter, but they kind of do.
Absolutely.
For future outcomes. And I thought that was a really, really good and interesting point.
Well, yeah, and it kind of goes back to, you know, we don't need polls till about week 8. We don't know who's good. We have no idea. Like, Ohio State being ranked 3rd all year was clearly a joke.
Yeah.
So they just it's frustrating, and it's one of my least favorite things about college football. I know you like talking about it, but it galls me.
It's good for business. I do have a question for you.
Okay.
I laid this scenario out. I don't know if you read this. I mentioned you in the post, but
I did read this. Go ahead.
Stanford beats Notre Dame. Clemson wins out. Alabama wins out. Michigan State wins out. Ohio State beats Michigan. Iowa loses to Michigan State in the Big Ten title. Michigan State wins out. So you've got Clemson, Alabama, Michigan State. Top 3 in the playoff. Oklahoma State beats OU. Baylor loses to TCU. Oklahoma State wins the Big 12, 11-1. What if the committee includes 12-1 Iowa in the number 4 slot over 11-1 Oklahoma State, which just won the Big 12?
Then Bob Bowlesby, Mike Holder, half a Boone Pickens Stadium just needs to march up to, or down to, I guess they meet in what? They meet in your home territory, don't they, the committee?
Grapevine, yeah.
Grapevine. They need to march down to Grapevine and just get some answers from Barry Alvarez and Tom Osborne, because the winner of the Big 12 at one loss should be in.
Yes.
Get this Big 10 stuff out of
here. It shouldn't even be, like, we shouldn't even be debating it.
No. And I don't know if I could do the podcast.
Well,
I have to take a walk.
The winner of the Big 12 will have one loss, by the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It can't not happen.
Yeah. So you would say they're taking 2 Big Ten teams?
Yeah, 2 Big Ten. The 2 teams that just played in the Big Ten championship.
Oh, my gosh.
And you know what actually might be more likely?
They can't do that, can they?
Well, what they would probably do is take Ohio State at 11-1 if they beat Michigan.
Yeah, they could totally justify that to themselves.
That would be in a lot of ways, that would be even worse, because at least Iowa had gone through the regular season undefeated. I don't think they would take a 12-1 Iowa team that got beat by Michigan State.
No, but the fact that we're even discussing it and that it could happen just tells you everything that's wrong with this system, this committee, everything about it. The Big 12
society.
Where are we at in society today?
Where are we at in society count is at 2 now.
We live in a world where, like, I love all the Gundyisms that come out. But the Big 12 really needs to get someone else along with Kirby Hokut. Kirby Hokut's by himself. There's only one Big 12 voice in there.
Yeah, he's just shooting up flare. He's texting SOSs. He's on a group text with all the other Big 12 ADs, just SOS during the playoff meetings.
Joel Klatt said he's at the kids' table. He could sit at the adult table because everyone's older than him.
That's good. That's probably true.
And that's why Stanford's getting so much love at 2 losses. They got Condoleezza, Tyrone Willingham. And there might be another at Stanford allegiance there. I can't remember, but anyway, it's frustrating, but I guess we'll have to do another podcast at the rankings. I think OSU, it was kind of shocking to me. OSU only dropped to 9 in the AP.
Yeah.
That's kind of shocking.
I thought so too.
That's a lot of respect for Baylor, I would say.
Yeah. I think it is. I think it'll be interesting to see where they are tonight with the playoff committee. It'll probably be 2021, 22, something like that.
Well, it's Bedlam week. We're going to have a guest on Thursday?
Well, we're going to have to tape on Wednesday because I'm going to be traveling.
Okay.
Unless you want to tape a pod on Thanksgiving.
I mean, I got nothing to do. I'll be working. I'll be hanging out with the folks. I got 30 minutes for you.
We're going to figure out. Maybe Brandon Whedon's available. Maybe we can snag him.
He's studying that Texans playbook.
Oh, he got signed. I keep forgetting.
With the Texans now. Yeah. Maybe we will. Send up a SOS flare. Brandon, we need you to come on.
The Whedon signal. Yeah, we will. We'll figure something out. We'll tape and then come out with another one, a Bedlam preview with a guest later on this week.
For sure. Okay. Bedlam week, man.
Sounds good, Carson.
All right. See ya.
Bye.